This is 1988 Tops, where every card has a story to tell. Your hosts are David McKellis and Matt Kuzma. Let's play ball. Welcome back to 1988 Tops. David, what's our card for this week?
No cards this week. We're just talking about economist and proponent of bank deregulation featured in the documentary Inside Job about the 2008 banking collapse, economist Glenn Hubbard.
Glenn Hubbard. All right.
If you search Glenn Hubbard, this nerdy economist shows up before this amazing ball player. Card number 325, Glenn Hubbard, second baseman for Atlanta. A second card this week, card 53T, Glenn Hubbard, second baseman for the Oakland Athletics.
All right, two cards. And David, I know why we're talking about Glenn today.
How do you know?
I'm going to open the curtain here a little bit and let folks know that we have a Google Doc system with all of our shows as we're planning shows, the show notes that we look at. There's also a folder that says future shows. And as I looked for the notes for today's recording, I saw that there was a stub of a show in the future shows for Glenn Hubbard. I'm opening this up now here, pulling it up on the Jumbotron. And what it says is it only has two bullet points. The first one says German-born player. The second one says 1984 Fleer card. What is happening? And when you click on that link, you get to what it may be the most amazing baseball card we've looked at in these 3 years we've been doing the show, David. And so when I clicked through and saw that, I thought, of course we're doing Glenn Hubbard. I cannot wait.
When I'm half asleep, sometimes I'll just open a Google document with the name of a random 1988 Topps baseball player and then forget entirely about that. I had no idea that this document existed. That was probably created in 2020. And as a further peek behind the curtain, Matt, when we started this podcast, I think that we thought, I don't know, there might be like 15 cards that we want to talk about. And now we're like 140 some episodes in. And as listeners know, we rarely do all-stars. We rarely do anybody who's been in the Hall of Fame. We like to talk about guys like Glenn Hubbard. And Glenn's got two cards, so we're knocking two out. First player that we have discussed born in Germany. We might have another one later in the set. He was a solid player. He made a single all-star appearance, and he had a beard before it was cool. And that Fleer card is one of the most inexplicable baseball card pictures I've ever seen. And Glenn has a Saber bio by Peter Gerken. So thank you, Peter, for your work and your service.
Thank you very much, Peter. And we go to the front of 325, where we've got Glenn Hubbard in the field. This is an excellent card. This is an excellent action shot. He's wearing the white Braves home uniform with the dark blue long sleeve shirt underneath, which looks really good. The blue shirt matching the blue of his Braves cap. And he is getting ready for a ball coming his way, I think. But his uniform is filthy. Filthy on the front. He definitely did a head first slide earlier in this game. Also really like the lighting. It looks like this game was played at maybe 3 a.m. and the only lighting was coming from like a pickup truck, you know, at home plate. It's got the brights on and that's what they're using to light up this field. Because it's very, very bright right on his face. It's a very dramatic look.
His shoes might be all black, like including the laces. I don't see a logo on those shoes. And he has a Kentucky waterfall happening here.
Yes.
A good short long, business in the front, party in the back. His mullet is flapping in the wind. He's got a mustache, a look of determination. Glenn was a very good fielder, and this is suitably a good fielding action shot. We've had fielding shots where it looked like the player didn't know how to use their glove, didn't know what sport they were playing. We're looking at you, Sam Horn. But this one looks like Glenn is ready. He's determined. I don't know if we've had a good fielding action shot, but this one is. This is a very good shot. Most of the time you get anybody with a bat is standing in the box, generally from like a three-quarter angle. But here we have Glenn in the field where he did his best work.
It's just one more thing about his stance is that he's not in a ready position. It looks like he's taken a step over to try to, as he's beginning to dive. So it just really is kind of an action shot in the field that you don't normally see, and really, really like it. So let's go to the back of 325, and we have Glenn Hubbard, second baseman, height 5'7", 170, right-handed batter and thrower, drafted by the Braves in the 20th round of 1975, born September 25th, 1957, at Hahn Air Force Base in Germany, with a home in Stone Mountain, Georgia.
Glenn had a Chris Berman nickname, Old Mother. It's all right. You have any favorite Glenns?
Let's see. Glenn Livett, Glenn Bow. Those are my only favorite Glenns.
You know, we've talked about Glenn Braggs. We talked about co-inventor of the high five, Glenn Burke. Glenn Miller and his orchestra. Glenn Close. Mm. Lady Glenns. Lady Glenns will do. Glenn Hansard from The Frames and the film Once. Glenn Danzig. And maybe my favorite Glenn is the creepy next-door neighbor kid from Mad Men. Glenn?
Mm.
Oh, he's always my favorite character. I don't know what that says about me. Hahn Air Force Base in West Germany was about 75 miles from Frankfurt in the town of Lautzenhausen. The Air Force Base was one of a number of bases that were all within 100 kilometers of one another, and those bases were so located so that they could reach different parts of Europe during the Cold War. And the base was given back to German authorities in 1993 and is now part of a public airport. Glenn is one of 44 players born in Germany, including Edwin Jackson, who played for 14 teams in 17 years, Craig Def Lefferts, Max Kepler, current player, and also a guy named Pretzels Getzian, the first German-born player in the majors. Charles Getzian played in the 1880s. He pitched for the Detroit Wolverines. He got his nickname not because of his German heritage, but because batters described the course of the ball from his hand to their bats as a pretzel curve. In delivering his pretzels, Getz faces third base with one foot in either corner of the lower end of the box. I feel like I need to read this through an old-timey radio voice. Bending the left knee slightly, he draws his right arm well back, then straightening up quickly, he slides the left foot forward with a characteristic little skip, and bringing his arm around with a swift overhead swing, drives the ball in at a lively pace. That's way too many words to say he threw a curveball. But Pretzels Getzian is one of the more accomplished players born in Germany, but he played in the 1800s. Glenn wasn't in Germany very long. His dad, Harry, was in the Air Force, so the family moved a lot, 12 times before Glenn got to the high school that he ended up graduating from. The family finally settled in Ogden, Utah, where Glenn graduated from Ben Lomond High School. And I thought, well, who's Ben Lomond? He must be a famous Utahan. Ben Lomond is named after a mountain in the area, which is itself named after a mountain in Scotland. The Scottish mountain is named Ben Lomond. Glenn was not a large guy, even as a professional. 5'7", 170 on his card. But when he was in high school, he was more like 150 pounds. He never let his size get in the way of his athletic ability. He played football, basketball, and baseball, and was on the school's wrestling team. As a senior, he hit .461 as a shortstop, and his play was noticed by some scouts, but Atlanta watched 470-plus other players go off the board before taking this undersized shortstop in the 20th round. He was picked 11 picks before John Tudor, and Atlanta had a really rough draft that year. They made 23 picks. Of those players, they played a total of 1,639 major league games. Glenn Hubbard played all but 285 of those. So 22 other guys played a total of 285 combined major league games. A really dismal draft. Glenn was initially thought to be too small to play shortstop, so Atlanta looked for a new position for him. He sent to Kingsport for rookie league, and he played third base. He was okay in the field, but good at the plate, showing a good eye, a .287 average, but a team-high .421 on base percentage.
He was only 17 years old, though, at that point, so he was given a little bit more time at rookie league in 1976 and was moved to second base at that time. He hit .294 in 37 games and moved up to A-ball. In 33 games at A level, he hit .318 with an OPS near 900. So very good considering that he didn't have very much power, and proved too good for A ball, Over 45 games total, he hit .385 with 5 home runs. In AA, he fell back to earth a bit, hitting only .225 in 87 games, but still got promoted to AAA for 1978. And Glenn developed a reputation for his glove.
Former Yankees and Braves third baseman Cleet Boyer was a minor league fielding instructor at the time, and he called Hubbard a natural. He said, "No one can take credit for teaching Hubbard to field. God gave him all the tools. I played 8 years with Bobby Richardson, and Hubbard reminds me very much of him. He wants to learn everything there is to know about the game, and you find few players with his attitude today." So at AAA, along with that great glove work, Glenn had a good start at the plate. Through July, he's hitting .336 with 14 home runs, and that earned him a fun fact.
That's right. The fun fact is that Glenn was selected as International League Rookie of the Year at Richmond in 1978 and played in the All-Star Game.
He also earned his first big league call-up at the age of 20. His first game came on July 14th against Steve Carlton and the Phillies, and Glenn got a single in his first at-bat. His line on the season was okay. He hit .258, 2 home runs, but his OPS plus was only 68. He missed some time with an elbow injury, but he finished the season as a big leaguer.
He followed that up with a rough first half of 1979, playing in all but 5 of Atlanta's games through July 1st. But by the end of July, he was only hitting .220. And in fact, looking at the back of the card, there's a lot of .230s, .240s, .250s. He was sent back to Richmond in 1979, where he again hit .336 in 34 games, earning his recall to Atlanta. He hit .400 in his last 7 games to close out the season on a high note. In 1980, Atlanta had Jerry Royster starting at second base, so Glenn started again at AAA.
But Royster was a defensive liability, and Glenn was hitting well, .315 through 38 games, and earned himself a call-up in late May, and he never went back to the minors as a player. In June, for Atlanta, he hit .310, but the rest of the year he hit .226. So he ended the season with a .248 average, 9 home runs, 21 doubles, 43 driven in. That's a 92 OPS plus, below league average, but not bad for a second baseman at the time.
In the strike-shortened 1981, Glenn played 98 games, hitting only .235. But he made only 5 errors for a .991 fielding percentage. Throughout his career, he was regularly in the top 5 among second basemen in assists and double plays, and was regularly the top in the National League in range factor per 9 innings. But the Braves were under .500 in the shortened season and fired Bobby Cox. When he fired him, Ted Turner said, "A fresh face, that's all it was. If Bobby wasn't here, he'd be one of the leading candidates for the job. A new broom sweeps clean, that's all."
Have you ever been fired from a job and then said that you were the best person for the job?
No, I haven't.
But there's still time.
But if given that news, I would be happy to be fired at that point, because I would have trouble trusting that boss again.
But Ted Turner, to his credit, Bobby Cox, definitively one of the greatest managers of all time, and spent a long period with the Braves doing good things, as opposed to this early attempt where the Braves were often under 500. But instead of rehiring Bobby, they hired another guy who would end up having a long and productive coaching career, Joe Torre. They got off to a great start in 1982, winning 13 straight games.
Glenn hit .248 with 9 home runs and led the league with 20 sacrifice hits. He played through a lot of injuries, but appeared in 145 games. Both Bob Horner and Dale Murphy acknowledged Glenn's importance to the team, Horner saying, "You take Hub out of our lineup, and who knows what we would have done." And Murphy saying, "People don't realize when a guy is playing with all the injuries, but when you watch a guy put a shoe on over a sore toe, or when he lifts his arm with a sore shoulder, you see the pain on his face. He's invaluable."
Glenn just showed an ability to grind through the pain. He played 140-plus games in 82 and 83, despite having some pretty serious injuries. Atlanta in 1982 would win the NL West by 1 game over the Dodgers. They were then swept in the NLCS by St. Louis. Glenn went 2-for-9 with an RBI. But after the season, Atlanta reflected that importance to the team, signing Glenn to a 5-year deal worth nearly $4 million.
And Atlanta was able to follow up that National League West title with an 88-win season in 1983, and Glenn was a big part of that. Through the All-Star break, he was hitting 300 with 5 homers, 3 triples, and 13 doubles, and was selected to the 1983 All-Star team.
When Satchel Paige was 59 years old, he pitched for Kansas City against the Boston Red Sox. It was his last game. He gave up a base hit. It was a double in the first inning to Carl Yastrzemski. Yastrzemski is the last player to ever get a hit against Satchel Paige. Satch went 3 innings, left the game leading 1-0, made only 28 pitches. You know who Satch's manager was? He took him off the field. Oh. Haywood Sullivan.
Oh, for crying out loud.
1-1. Here's the bearded wonder, Glenn Hubbard.
One of the Stone Mountain boys.
It looks like he came off a cough drop box, but he can really play. He's the only National League second baseman hitting 300. And with a runner going, he hits a one-hopper and eats up Rifkin. And everybody's safe. Boy, that thing exploded.
Glenn had a great appearance, getting an infield hit that ate up Cal Ripken Jr. and being called the Bearded Wonder.
Not a lot of guys wearing beards in the 80s. We've had Bruce Sutter, but most guys leaned more toward the mustache at the time, so it seemed notable. Now we've got a few gross beards in the major leagues. I also appreciate just listening to Vin Scully tell a seeming non sequitur story about Satchel Paige and somehow time it perfectly so that he's still able to talk about Glenn Hubbard while Glenn Hubbard is still having an at-bat. He finishes his story and then rolls right into introducing Glenn Hubbard. Truly an amazing person and an amazing announcer, and he is missed.
Glenn finished the season in 1983 with probably his best offensive stats, a career-high 148 games and a .263 average, a career-high 12 home runs and 70 RBIs. During this season, he also would take a picture that would make him a legend. It's time to look at this card for the 1984 Fleer.
Fleer at the time was an upstart card company, and so they used some different pictures, as we saw during the Billy Ripken episode. And this one, this is an amazing picture. You have Glenn's hair looks like it's swooping out from underneath his hat, like he got a fresh Don Sutton perm. Behind him, you have some kind of bird mascot, a giant inflatable Philly Fanatic, and Glenn is holding a 7-foot boa constrictor, and he's got a nice smile. The powder blue Atlanta jersey is also just a good look.
Yeah, I love that powder blue with the dark blue script, the blue hat and white A. I haven't seen this uniform in a long time.
What do you think's going on behind him?
I gotta think that maybe it's like a citizenship and naturalization ceremony for
the Philly Fanatic.
For the Philly Fanatic.
He finally became an American citizen. Now he can vote.
You know, where is the Fanatic from? Canada, I'm sure. There's a color guard in the background. I don't know. Is this at Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia? I mean, with the Fanatic there. But the thing is that the seats are colored yellow, orange, and brown, which I think maybe was just 1970s and 1980s multi-purpose baseball stadium.
It's important to point out that in the Philly Fanatic's official MLB.com bio, he is from the Galapagos Islands. He's 6'6" and 300 pounds. In parentheses, mostly fat. That's
what?
Rude.
That's very rude.
Especially because his waist is 90 inches and he only weighs 300 pounds.
I'm impressed.
His favorite food is cheesesteaks, soft pretzels, hoagies, scrapple, and tasty cakes.
He nailed it. Those are the top 5 Philadelphia foods.
His favorite song is Motown Philly, obviously.
No doubt.
What? Okay, sorry. I'm done with that. This was a celebration of the Fanatic's birthday. That explains the madness that was happening behind him. According to Glenn, a guy had a snake on the field. Of course, obviously, at the Fanatic's birthday party, you're going to bring a 7-foot boa constrictor. He said, I grabbed a photographer and I said, hey, can I get my picture taken with this snake? As you do. So I put it around my neck, get the picture taken. He sends me an 8x10 and that's all I know about it. So Hubbard had grown up with snakes. He wasn't afraid of this boa constrictor, as clearly evidenced by the comfort shown on this picture. He did say it was heavy and strong. It was almost like he was trying to get me. So it turns out that the guy who took the picture was also freelancing for FLIR. So Hubbard, the next year, shows up at spring training, and a kid comes up to him to sign the card, and he got upset. He thought it was disrespectful that nobody asked him if he wanted to have this kind of jokey picture. And as we see on his card, he's a serious player, and this 88 Tops is the picture of a serious player. He didn't like that he wasn't in on the joke. He said he didn't want to sign them for the first few years. He felt like they weren't treating him like a professional. He said, thinking back on it, man, it's one of the best cards. Not because of me, but because of the snake around my neck. I look like a snake charmer with a beard and all that stuff. This card has become what Glenn Hubbard is known for. Among Braves fans, he's probably known as, like, you know, second baseman, made an all-star game, was decent on some less than stellar teams. But among baseball fans generally, this picture made Glenn an icon.
Oh, it is. It's magical. It's framed so well. The snake looks so good. And Glenn has this very relaxed smile. Just seems like it's, you know, like it's his snake. You wouldn't know that he just picked it up from some guy who happened to have a snake on the field.
That was probably threatening children. You don't often on cards see things like the madness happening behind them either. Like you can kind of make out maybe like a person in the background. And this you can see like multiple mascots. Like they don't normally make appearances on these cards. So it's just a really neat card. And this card, if you look on eBay, goes for like $10. And this is a regular common base card. It is anything but basic and anything but common.
That FLIR card was one of the highlights of Glenn's 1984. That's kind of a shame. He missed more than 40 games due to various injuries, including a shoulder injury suffered during a brawl with the Padres that we have discussed before on the Pascual Perez episode, among many others. He played only 3 of the last 35 games of the season and ended up .234 with 9 homers and 43 RBIs. In 1985, Atlanta changed managers, bringing in Eddie Haas from their AAA affiliate. And Haas tried to push Glenn out.
It didn't really work. Haas ended up fired in August. Glenn's offense, which was previously average, dropped off. His average was about the same, .232, but he didn't show as much power, and his OPS plus dropped from 95 to 75. Similar stats under new manager Chuck Tanner in 1986, hitting only .230. And then in 1987, Atlanta brings in Damaso Garcia, and he's expected to be the starter at second base. Glenn's going to be the backup, but Garcia never played due to the knee injury that we discussed in the Garcia episode. Glenn had a pretty good year in 1987. His average improved to a career best .264. He added a career high 33 doubles. He was frustrated, though, because he was playing in a lot of games, but 40 times he was pulled for a pinch hitter, often late in the game with men on base. He said, things like that just made me feel like I wasn't part of the team, and I developed a bad attitude.
He also had an unlucky incident on June 25th.
So in the top of the ninth inning, with two outs against the Dodgers, you have Hubbard on first base, you have a runner on third base. The Dodgers are up 2-1. Ted Simmons is at the plate.
On the ninth. Kershiser against Ted Simmons. And the 2-1 pitch. Swung on. It hit Hubbard.
The ball game is over.
It's a base hit, but Hubbard is out. The ball game is over. It's a 2-1 win for the Dodgers. They're tending to Hubbard right now. What a way to end it. We hope that Hubbard is okay.
So rather than having a tie game, have that runner from first now on third base ready to score, you have the end of the game. I just thought it was an interesting highlight, quote unquote, that showed up when I searched for Glenn Hubbard's name, getting line drived out of a game.
Also hearing Skip Carey say, "The game is over." The game is over. Perhaps because of that incident, or maybe he was just ready for a change. He was a free agent after the 1987 season. That brings us to our second card, and that is card 53T, the traded card that's got Glenn Hubbard with the Athletics.
On January 11th, Glenn signed a free agent deal with the Oakland A's. He took a bit of a pay cut. He was making $555,000 for Atlanta in 1987. He signed for a two-year deal for worth $800,000. So a pay cut for a 30-year-old Glenn Hubbard. But he gets the second card. He's expected to be the starting second baseman for Oakland. This is a good-looking card.
This definitely looks like picture day. Glenn Hubbard's there posing with the bat on one knee, looking very thoughtful. Just showing that Glenn is ready for anything. He's ready for picture day. He's got the satin jacket.
This is the same satin jacket that Don Baylor was wearing in his Topps traded card. I'm probably not the same size.
Probably not. Don Baylor, a much larger man than Glenn. But this is a good move for Glenn. He hadn't played in the playoffs since 1982, and the A's were obviously making some moves. They also picked up Bob Welch and Dave Parker in the offseason. And Glenn was expected to start at second base, but he was hit in the face during spring training and landed on the DL. Man, oh man. But he did play 105 games that season. Fine on offense, good on defense, as you'd expect. Hitting .255, which was a 93 OPS plus. He missed time with a hamstring injury at the end of the season and didn't play in the ALCS against Boston. Mike Gallego started all four games against Boston.
But Glenn was back for the World Series. He went 2-for-4 in game one in that game that ultimately was disappointing for Oakland. He added another hit in game three, the only game that the A's won in that series. But the Dodgers won the series in five games. And Glenn returned for 1989, having to compete with Mike Lego Gallego and Tony Phillips for the starting spot at second base. He initially won the spot, but lineup changes throughout the season didn't allow Glenn to stay on track and get any consistency. His average dropped to 198, and he was released in July.
So closing the book on Glenn Hubbard, 12 seasons in the major leagues with a batting average of .244, 70 home runs, 22 triples, 214 doubles, an OPS plus of 85. He led National League second baseman in assists twice and double plays three times. How about in retirement?
Glenn ended up back with Atlanta, serving as a minor league hitting instructor from 1991 to 1998. And then for the next 11 years, he was the first base coach under Bobby Cox. He was let go when Cox retired. Glenn said, "We won 14 straight division championships in Atlanta, and I was part of seven of those. And I thought I was going to get fired every year." He felt like there was a lot of pressure on the coaching staff and a lot of pressure to win with these Atlanta teams. He said, "And the one year I didn't think I was going to get fired, I got fired." That's baseball, I guess. Glenn joined the Royals organization and served in various capacities in the minors for a few years, including as a hitting instructor and a bench coach for the Lexington Legends.
So David, after looking at Glenn Hubbard and after being mesmerized by the boa constrictor, and then looking at the rest of his career, what do we think?
You said mesmerized by the boa constrictor. Is it Anton LaVey? Yes. Do you know who Anton LaVey is?
No.
Anton LaVey was the founder of the Church of Satan. And when you said mesmerized by the boa constrictor, I could only think of Anton LaVey's publicity photo, which is also his Wikipedia photo, which is just this bald man with a Fu Manchu mustache and a snake in his hand.
Oh my God.
No indication that Glenn Hubbard is a member of the Church of Satan, I believe. I think it's an interesting part of his story. This is a guy who was married at 18 and divorced at 19, but then met another woman, found Jesus, and is still married to the same person who he married in 1978. Glenn is remembered for this one card and the smiling face holding a snake. But he was also a good second baseman. Among 1980s second basemen, ninth overall in wins above replacement, fourth in defensive WAR. He's the number one second baseman all-time in range factor per nine innings. So that's the putouts and assists that you're credited for divided by the innings played. So he's getting to a lot of defensive plays. He's making a lot of defensive plays at a rate better than anyone in history. Offensively, he was limited, as we discussed. His card shows a lot of 230s, 240s. But unless you were Lou Whitaker or Ryan Sandberg, every second baseman in the 1980s was limited. 263 with 12 home runs was a pretty solid season for a normal second baseman. In overall wins above replacement, he's ahead of Steve Sachs and Juan Samuel in the 1980s, two guys who made multiple All-Star games and had a bigger profile than Glenn Hubbard. His 1980s stats look like Jim Gantner, a guy who we discussed who was a 17-year legend with the Milwaukee Brewers. Both of them were good on defense. Hubbard had a little bit lower average, but a higher on-base percentage. He had a lot of walks, considering he was a offensively limited player. He got on base a lot. And he hit for a decent power, 9, 10 home runs a season. But when we go back to that card and how he's remembered, at first he was annoyed, and he felt like people weren't taking him seriously. But by the time 2016 came around and he's coaching in Lexington, he's in on the joke. And he realizes that that's a way that people remember him and something that's memorable and fun about his career. And the Lexington Legends made a bobblehead of this amazing image on this card. And it is an equally amazing bobblehead that includes a fuzzy beard. The only difference between the original photo and this one is that he's in a Lexington Legends jersey and not an Atlanta jersey.
It's beautiful.
30 plus years later, Glenn was in on the joke, 40 plus years in baseball, and yet this is what he's remembered for. And that's good because he's remembered for something fun. He used to send back a different card if someone sent that card for him to sign in the mail. He would send a signature on a different card because he didn't like it. But now Glenn says, I'd do it again. A lot of people like that card. I look at it, look at my long hair, look at the beard. I mean, it was just really full, and oh man, the card is perfect. And we agree, that is a perfect baseball card. And it's also a perfect moment and an encapsulation of something that I think we all should consider, that we're not necessarily remembered how we would love to be remembered. And sometimes we're remembered for an imperfect moment or for a fun moment or for something that's silly. And that doesn't have to define us. We're not all baseball players. We don't get a baseball card. But remembering to find joy in little moments. For a long time, Glenn didn't feel like he was in on the joke. But in looking back, he's learned to accept that there's something fun about that.
We look at the front of his 1988 Topps card, where he's serious in the field. And he was a serious player. The focus that it takes to be an infielder, to be ready at every pitch. But what I love about the 1984 Fleer card is that it showed that Glenn was ready to have fun at a moment's notice too. And it showed his real personality, and it showed something real about him.
He's an opposing player joining the Philly Fanatics birthday celebration. There's something very fun and very of its time about that.
You love to see it. You love to see people enjoying life. Glenn enjoyed life on that card, and we enjoyed the story. So thank you very much, David, for that today. And thank you to you at home. If you need to get something off your chest or you need to get a snake off your shoulders, either way, you just reach out to us on Twitter. We're at Topps1988. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week.